Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. We are live out at MTSU football practice. Blue Raiders on the field as we speak. If you missed our conversation with Derek Mason or Chris Massaro earlier, go check it out wherever you get your podcast, Robbie and Rex Road. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Nick Suss, who covers the Titans for the Tennessean. Nick, good morning. How you doing?
I'm good, y'all. How's Murfreesboro treating you?
Murfreesboro is great. Lovely. It's not too hot yet, so we're doing very well. Now, we do have some hot takes. Rex Road is over here talking about how Mason McKenzie might be the best receiver on the team and is really just dominating Titans training camp. What have you seen from Kenzie and Phillips and that kind of crew that's kind of on the periphery as to whether or not they're going to make the roster in that wide receiver room?
I will tell you guys that when we were out at Nissan two Saturdays ago, I turned to some other reporters and said, Kenzie's making this team. You know that, right? Like, he does look like a guy who fits as a slot. I might have tempered back on that over the last week or two as I've seen some of the other slot guys play a little bit more. But look, when we look at the pecking order and who's getting the first team reps and who's getting targeted from the top quarterbacks and all that stuff, Mason Kenzie does seem to be the next guy in the pecking order after Tyler Boyd among those slots. So, I mean, Kyle Phillips could overtake it, and we obviously know that who plays punt returner and kick returner is going to swing the conversation a bunch, but I have been impressed, more or less, that this dude just keeps going out there, getting open, and making catches.
Like, he's better, and that's the thing. Like, people think about Mason Kenzie, and it's like, oh, yeah. It's kind of like Malik Willis to me, Nick, which is, we were talking about earlier. I mean, you can get better. You're allowed to improve, yeah. And also it is a different offense, different staff, so sometimes that helps guys too. Like, those two guys are more able to play in NFL games now than they were a year ago, in my opinion.
Oh, I agree. And I look at Jaquan Jackson and Kiaris Jackson and Kyle Phillips. They all kind of fill the same role. The Titans don't really have too many fringe roster receivers who do something different than those guys. So if you have four replicas of essentially the same format of player, theory stands, you should just pick the one who's best at doing that. Now, Jaquan Jackson being young and being the draft pick obviously skews things, but if DeAndre can't go the first 2 weeks and you're carrying seven receivers, I don't see why you don't carry Kenzie as one of them.
So how do you think the return game is going to factor into this thing? With both punt return, but obviously the kickoff rule that's changing this year that we're all very fascinated to see starting on Saturday in the preseason game. How do you think that factors into the wide receiver discussion?
I think that it might be a little bit different than years past, where the idea of, well, just have a guy who can only do special teams might not be as prominent as before. I still think that playing receiver will be a little bit more valuable than who can return the punts, especially if the kickoff jobs go to people like Treylon Burks and Tajay Spears and people who are going to make the roster anyway. But, yeah, I mean, we can go off the depth chart that came out yesterday. Kenzie was number one in the punt return. I think that probably had more to do with seniority than anything else. Somebody's going to have to return punts, and whether it's Jaquan Jackson, whether it's Mason Kenzie, whether it's Eric Guerra, or whether it's Kiaris Jackson, one of the 50 to 53 guys on the roster, those last four in, are probably going to be the guy who returns punts week one. But the other three will probably be on the practice squad, and if one of them struggles, the other one will get shuttled up. So I'm not putting too much, because I don't think there's much separation between those guys as we want there to be.
Talking to Nick Suss, Titans beat writer extraordinaire from the Tennessean. So, Nick, do you feel any better about right tackle for this team after 2 days of watching Nicholas Petit-Frere play right tackle?
I didn't think I would, but I think I do. He has looked better. He has looked more comfortable. He has looked secure in the job, and I don't think there is much of a competition based on what we're seeing in practice. I mean, I want to see them in the games. I want to see them function through the offense, but Petit-Frere has looked better than his cohorts at right tackle. I feel a little more comfortable about it. I don't know necessarily if he's going to have made as big of a jump from year two to year three as you would want because of so much of the missed time, but he definitely does look like the more competent option right now.
Nick, what have you made of the camp that Will Levis has had to this point?
I don't know. I want to know. I really do want to know, but it has been kind of what Will Levis is book-wise. I've been joking when 7-on-7 football's in the Olympics, he's a guy who needs to be on Team USA. Like, he looks so good in 7-on-7, and that's not a dig. Like, it is really good when a quarterback can put balls in tight windows against single coverage and read the defense the way he has, and he looks great there. And I thought he looked really good in one of the red zone periods yesterday, and obviously the deep ball looks good, and I've been really impressed by the way that he's been willing to take the checkdowns and willing to throw the ball away when necessary, and all of those guideposts and checkpoints to improving in year two seem there. But then I look at it and I say, yeah, a lot of this is happening against a team that is missing its top two cornerbacks, and I haven't been able to really get a gauge of what he'll look like against a live rush because so much of it gets blown dead before it comes to him. And those were some of the things that we needed to see last year, of how has he improved against pressure and how has he improved against the top defenses. And I don't know if we're going to see a judgment of that except for maybe a couple of series in the preseason here and there. And I don't know, let's say Seattle next week comes out and has a lot of fun one versus one reps. Maybe we'll see it there because Seattle's got a great secondary and that should be a good test. But for now, I really, really don't know other than, yeah, it looks fine.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to know the number of passes that were thrown in team that would have been sacks in real life. You know, like there's been a few of those for sure. It is. I'm with you. I think that's a great assessment of the whole thing. As far as the defense, Nick, so I think this is the most talented Titan secondary ever. I think this is one of the most talented secondaries in the NFL if they're all present and accounted for. It certainly health issues are in quite a few spots. And then I'm watching Tavondre Sweat, and I don't know what the snap count situation will be with him in real games, but my goodness, he looks like a wrecker. And then there's some other questions about this defense, but I also think Murray looks good. I guess big picture, with everything they've done, do you feel better about what they can be defensively than you did, you know, like when camp started even?
I do, but then I was also – I'll get geeky for a second. I was looking at this yesterday. In the last 15 years, there are 92 teams that have improved their pass defense by 400 yards year over year, which is about 25 yards a game. Those 92 teams have improved their wins year over year by a median of zero.
Wow.
Like, there are, I think, 20 teams that have improved by 800, improved by a median wins of 0.5. Like, improving your secondary is undoubtedly good. And I am really impressed by the ways the Titans have gone about modernizing and improving and making the secondary more aggressive and all this stuff. I am just interested to see, is this going to correlate to anything? The defense is going to be better there. And on the interior, like you're saying, Sweat, I don't know how a team will stop him with a single block. So if the option for the entire season is either single block Sweat or single block Simmons, the Titans have a huge matchup advantage, and that's awesome, and I feel great about that. But I still look up and down this defense and think, it's better in places, it's worse in places. Is the overall result going to be more wins? I'm still not 100% convinced.
Nick, continuing the theme on the defensive front there, what have you seen from Kenneth Murray? A lot of conversation around him in this camp and the camp that he's had to this point. You know, obviously things did not work out for him with the Chargers, but has your opinion on what he could be for this team changed based on what you've seen from him to this point?
Yeah, I think it has. I've been really impressed by how instinctive he is, how we always knew he was athletic, but how he uses that athleticism to get to the ball quickly. I think that him and Gibbons actually make a pretty intriguing tandem because of the way their strengths play off of each other. I think they're in the last, what is it, four practices since pads came on, I think I count five tackles for loss between the two of them on outside run plays. So it's one thing to just jet up the middle, get a straight line tackle, but these guys have been pursuing, scraping across blockers, making their way to the edge and getting there. And I think that's really impressive to blow up screen passes, to bring blow up toss sweeps. That's something that you want out of your middle linebackers, and that's just one step. It's just one criteria. I still want to see him continue to grow in coverage, but if the plan is you feel good about your first seven DBs right now and Murray is there to be an extra run stopper in the middle, I don't hate that plan.
So Arden Key, we still have don't have the, unless I missed something this morning, the official word from the NFL.
Right.
But, you know, it's essentially confirmed, even though he doesn't want to talk about it either. He's gonna right now, looking at six games. He's still getting the reps, which is interesting. You know, like, we think about Petit Frere last year, and he basically was like, yeah, just go, you know, keep yourself in shape. You know, you got to work on, like, who's going to be playing in these first few games. But Key is still getting these key reps. Do you think that's going to change? Do you think that's because they just need to give the best possible look to this offensive line right now in these team sessions?
I like that theory. That's probably a good theory. It's a matter of numbers, too, at that position. The Titans aren't particularly deep there. And I look at who's been getting the second-team reps this week. It's Shane Ray, who hasn't played a NFL snap in 6 years. And it's been a lot of Jalen Harrell, who was, what, the fifth-to-last pick in the draft. I mean, you have Rashad Weaver, and I think Rashad Weaver is going to play a lot. But if you're bumping Key down to third team, number one, that completely wrecks all functionality for the third team offense.
Yeah,
I don't necessarily know if that's a fair one-to-one comparison to Petit Frere with the threes last year, but also you want to give that number one defense a good look to see how it functions. And I don't know if Ray's there yet. I don't know if Harrell's there yet, and Weaver could be there, but again, that's just a matter of preference with the coaches if you're swabbling between ones and twos.
Well, Nick, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and we will talk to you soon.
Yeah, happy to help y'all.
Absolutely. Nick Suss from the Tennessean, our guest here on Robbie and Rexroll. We'll take your thoughts on what Nick had to say. A couple of interesting things that he hit on with Will Levis there that I want to get to coming up next as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroll, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. We are out here live at MTSU football practice. Chase McCabe lurking about behind us on the program, unbeknownst to Joe Rex Road. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Imposing figure. Suit him up. Look at this guy. Suit him up.
He is an imposing figure. Chase is going to get out there and kick the ball here in a minute. Take your thoughts.
We almost got kicked
on our phone and text line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Somebody on the text line wanted to know if Nick Suss is Canadian. I don't know. I'd have to ask Nick. Is he of Canadian origin? I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think he's – I know he went to the University of Georgia. He's a bulldog along with Gentry Estes. The Tennessee –
How many Canadians end up at Georgia?
Bulldogs. What's that?
How many Canadians end up at UGA?
Probably some.
Probably some.
Yeah, so, you know, but yeah, not a ton, I suppose. I mean, you know, the – swimmer got a medaled for Ireland is a UT swimmer.
Yeah.
So that's UT. That's University of Tennessee, the only UT in the SEC.
That is true.
Thank you.
615-737-1025, our phone number. I thought Nick Suss's answer on Levis and the camp that he's had to this point is pretty interesting. And look, we know this every camp. Like, they're not going to hit the quarterback. So the quarterback is feeling a rush. But they're not really feeling a rush because they know that they're not going to get hit. So it is different once game action comes around and you know that you're not just some target back there that can't be touched. You're going to get a helmet in your chest if you don't get rid of the ball quick enough. So there's always that part of it with every quarterback heading into real live game action that's just totally different than any practice setting can replicate. But it sounded like Suss, and I guess you too, don't really know what to make of Levis's camp to this point based on, number one, the conditions around him with the right side of the offensive line that have not been great to this point. Number two, as he mentioned, L'Jarius Sneed's not been out there a ton. Owusu obviously is hurt, so you're talking about your top two corners not available. And then number three, I mean, Will Levis, I think, has had some good days and some not-so-good days out there, which is basically – kind of what the book on him was heading into all this is, how does he find consistency and how long is it going to take him to do that under this new system?
It is a shame that he hasn't had the looks that he would have been getting if, and I'm sure Snead will participate some. And like Nick said, the Seahawks will bring very good corners to Nashville next week. But it is a shame he hasn't had as much of a good look. And Woozy would have been out there every day. Yep. He got hurt. But, yeah, my quick assessment would be more good than bad. It would be hard to judge at times. Like you said, it's just like when you get into team, I mean, it's in his face so much. And Brian Callahan has said it a lot of times, like, this defense is a pain, and Denard Wilson is turning things loose, and he's giving them all kinds of looks, and they're seeing pressures. So there's sometimes sometimes it's just someone getting beat quickly, and sometimes it's a pressure that's just really effective. But whatever it is, there's just a lot of plays that are blown up, and sometimes they let it go and see what he does with it, even though he would have been sacked. I'd say more good than bad, and just there's just more throws than you'd want that just, you know, maybe say a little bit here or there. And then, like you said, he'll have these periods and sevens where it's like laser, laser, laser. The deep ball is pretty freaking good. I mean, he's throwing a lot of good deep balls. And I agree on the check down thing, too. I do think that that's a conscious thing. Even though you're supposed to, you know, you want to try things in camp, you want to be aggressive and all that stuff, see what you can get away with. You also want to get into the practice of, okay, read, yep, go ahead. Yeah, Pollard or Spears will get you 5 yards.
Yeah.
And I do think that you see that with him as an intentional thing. Overall, I think it's been fine. You want to see better protection, and then you want to see the best possible looks from the secondary. And there's no question that right now he and Calvin Ridley are still trying to get on the exact same wavelength. And they've certainly made some plays, but, like, that's what the next few weeks should bring. And that's important.
Sounded like he was relatively encouraged with what he's seen from Petit Frere for 2 days in pads. Now, how much is that because of the other options that are there? How much is that because Petit Frere is playing well? I guess that remains to be seen. But Suss sounded a little bit more optimistic than maybe I expected him to sound about Petit Frere at right tackle.
It's better. He's clearly the best option, especially when you consider, you know, 2 days of work coming off that kind of, like he said, yep. Saturday, you know, he had a – I mean, his press conference Saturday, he was almost giddy to be up there talking to us. And like he said, last time he put a helmet on was in October. Yeah. And he put it on that day and immediately was the best option at right tackle. So as long as it's going to get better from there, then, yeah, I think that was a pretty encouraging start for him. And then you got to wonder about right guard. You know, I think I said Sadiq Charles yesterday was hurt. Actually, he did miss a day because of a personal issue. So, you know, Charles, Raidens, you need one of those guys to look better and to play better. And maybe if Petit Frere keeps coming and stacks good days on top of them, maybe that helps the whole thing over there. Just be competent, solid. That's
do you think
looking for.
Levis and Ridley getting on the same page, is it a matter of timing? Is it a matter of Levis kind of adjusting to Ridley's speed on the deep ball? They've tried a couple deep shots and hit on some, missed on some others. But what do you make of, like, that process and – how important it is for those two to get things rolling and on the same page by the time Chicago rolls around?
Yeah, if you had to pick one of the two outside guys to get hurt, you'd pick Hopkins, and just because he and Levis, they've got a good feel for each other. And even not even necessarily always the deep balls, just even some of the intermediate stuff, it's a little off, and you can tell it's just a matter of kind of them learning each other on some things. So I don't think there's anything all that unusual about that. It's just that this work is important moving ahead. And I do think if it starts to really get good, then you see just naturally, obviously, more success from the offense and from Levis.
Yeah, I mean, that one is going to be really interesting to see how quickly those two can get on the same page and come together once the season comes around here. And everybody's going to focus in on Ridley and the deep shots, and we've talked about the speed with him, but I mean, he does bring more to the table than just running go routes and catching the ball 55 yards down the field. He's going to be a really important option, like third down. Like, you need to look Calvin Ridley's way. Like, it does – I mean, you're going to have Tyler Boyd, you're going to have DeAndre Hopkins, but Ridley's got to be a guy that's first and foremost a chain mover for you, and then kind of secondarily to that, you hope to get some big plays out of him down the field as well. Like, how many big plays does Calvin Ridley are you taking per game? Three? Two?
Well, yeah, if you can get three. I mean, big play meaning like chunk play, like 20-plus?
Like attempting, yeah.
Attempting. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you know, I think so. Yeah, yeah. You definitely need to take some shots with him. And And again, he is a vicious route runner to the point where you can really do some stuff with him in the middle of the field, and then he gets himself a lot of space sometimes, you know, with the way he runs routes, obviously against man. But I think one way or another, big plays for him have to be a priority. And I think, you know, with Tyler Boyd, I feel like you already do see a pretty good connection with Levis. And I know it's easier because, you know, with Boyd it is a lot of times it's quicker stuff. And of course, Boyd, as Brian Callahan explained that really well this weekend too, Boyd's – you have to be, as a tight end or a slot receiver, so good about feeling zone coverages and feeling where to go and then being on the same wavelength with your quarterback. And Boyd is obviously a scientist at that, you know.
Yep.
He's got a PhD in that. So that's already – really good. And I think it was TD, right? TD who predicted he's going to lead the team in receptions. I think it was a few weeks ago. Yeah, I tell you what, I'm going to keep an eye on that take, and we got to make sure to give credit to TD if that's how it turns out, because I could see that. I could.
615-737-1025, our phone number, your thoughts on the Titans. We are live out here at MTSU football practice today. Nick Keyser live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We're going to get into a little college football coming up next. We'll revisit some comments that Derek Mason had on our show earlier today. Also get to some comments around the SEC as well. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. As you've been now here and established yourself for a few months, what excites you the most about this group, this team, and the opportunity that you've got moving forward here?
Well, this isn't a rebuild. I, you know, people that are thinking rebuild are wrong. This can be plug and play. It starts with having one of the best quarterbacks in Conference USA, right? So, I mean, anytime you have a quarterback, there's a chance for success. You got to keep him upright. But it's more than that. It's about having balance to what we do. We've got running back. We got a room full of running backs. You'll see today, like as you're watching practice, we can go as many as five or six deep, okay? And they're veteran guys, you know. I mean, like with varied experiences, right? And so I think to have a quarterback, but a run game, you know, like to go along with what your quarterback can do, and then we've given him some different weapons outside. Now, you know, I mean, he does get a chance to play with a tight end, and I think we all know. If you can hold the edges with a tight end, if you can open up the middle of the field, opportunities outside are big.
As MTSU football coach Derek Mason on with us earlier on the program, interested to see how year one goes for Derek Mason and the Blue Raider football program. What do you make of him stepping into this job, Joe? You know, obviously Rick Stocks was here forever and did a really nice job building the program. And then, you know, it kind of felt pretty obvious at the end of last year that it was reaching the point of stagnation and that a change was probably needed. So they make the change. Derek Mason coming in for year one. What do you make of this program, the opportunity with him now at the helm, and this opportunity also for him getting back into the coaching ranks?
Yeah. Well, I remember when it happened. I was a bit surprised. I kind of thought he's going to go the NFL route. And look, there is, as we've discussed many times, it's just a different job for college coaches, you know, than it used to be. And in some ways, a much more difficult job than it used to be. But he's fully embraced this. And I think, you know, look, Stock still did a great job for a long time, you know. I think some of the interesting stuff we heard from Chris Massaro when we had him on was the importance of, you know, energizing a fan base, yep, getting people out here and things like that. I mean, it's not easy. College football Saturdays. You know, a lot of people who live here, you know, they may be Middle Tennessee fans, but they're also Vols fans, right? And so, like, how do you get those people to come out and support, you know, to support your team? He talked about the we versus they thing, which I thought was interesting. You know, they lost a lot of guys to the portal to Power 5 schools, as we discussed. So, really interesting stuff what Chris was saying too about you don't want to lose guys to peer institutions, right? You don't want to lose guys in the conference to other schools. So they got all these new transfers in. Like DMA said, you've got a quarterback, and that is a big deal for the, you know, your first year to be able to inherit a quarterback who performed well is definitely a good thing. Nick Vadiato, and they've got good receivers, Omari Kelly. Jamarian Carter's a guy who was previously at Michigan State. You know, they've got good running backs. So can they play power football more effectively? And then the defense is just – it's just a totally brand new, you know. I mean, this conference this year, Liberty is loaded. I think Liberty is a team that actually has a – like Liberty is a team to talk about when it comes to the playoff. Caden Salter, Vols fans know that name.
Oh, yeah.
He's running that Jamie Chadwell offense at Liberty. That's a really – like, they are the clear favorite. And probably, you know, what Ty Helton's doing at WKU, they'd be number two. But, you know, right now, I think this Middle Tennessee – the thing that you like is that, you know, obviously Derek Mason has a great pedigree as a defensive coordinator. He brought in a very experienced D coordinator who's been in the NFL and a lot of different places, Power Five. So, you know, if you get that coach up factor with what they think are some good talented transfers, and I think this, you know, you could make a case for this team to be third or fourth in the league, and that's pretty good in your first year if you can pull that off.
You mentioned the comments that Chris Massaro made on our show earlier about the we versus they, as he, but we got a text about that. Kind of talking about that, says, you know, I didn't really think that that was the problem. Every time I saw Stock in public, he was always nice. The issue for Rick was that he could never win the big one. He couldn't win those one or two games a year that would put him over the hump consistently, at least. And that is from an unnamed texter on the text line. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, I was here in the press box here. Absolutely almost unthinkable loss to UAB in the CUSA title game in Brent Stockstill's last game. You know? And that was a chance for them to win the championship. And it was just I don't remember all the details, but it was one of those like this, and this all had to happen for that to be possible.
Yep.
You know, now is that you put that on Rick? I mean, well, look, I mean, he's head coach. There was some terrible luck in that one. But yeah, look, I understand. At some point, you know, you have the same voice for a long time in a program and it's good. Can you get it to great? You know, you could also be worse. I mean, that's always the gamble, right? When you take consistency away, it's a bit of a gamble. But, I mean, I hear what Chris is saying on just trying to get this community going, and I do think that the facility they're building should be a game changer for them.
Yep.
I also think, and Chris talked about this, you know, the facility – the fatigue from donors, the, hey, we need this, but also, you know, we got to have enough money to pay some NIL for these guys. That's where it gets really interesting. I think we're headed toward an era of facility upgrades being de-emphasized, and we're there already. But Vanderbilt, Middle Tennessee right now are in the midst of these, and it's good that they're doing it now. I think 5 years from now, maybe it's like, it's just hard to even get it going. It's like, wait a minute, I mean, I thought I had to give this money for players now.
Right.
So it's good to get that. Because it's still a recruiting tool. It's still the experience of the players in your program, right? Like, it's still got to be really good. Assuming that you're able to pay roughly the same as others in the league, and, again, Liberty may be different, but then, you know, what's the experience like for guys here? I mean, it's got to be good because you're trying to keep them from going somewhere else.
The coaches poll comes out yesterday, preseason AP coach or preseason coaches poll, for the top 25 in college football. Tennessee coming in at number 15, LSU at number 12, which we discussed a little bit earlier in the show. Tennessee, the number 7 team in the SEC on the list. So it is a very SEC and Big Ten dominated top 20 for sure in the preseason coaches bowl. What did you make of where Tennessee landed at number 15 and where they slot in the SEC as the coaches have it in the coaches poll that came out yesterday?
I think Tennessee around 15 is fine. I think I'd probably have them somewhere in the 11 to 15 range. My only real issue with the whole thing is Tennessee behind LSU, but that's because I would have LSU at like 23.
Yeah.
I mean, and maybe they will prove me wrong. I know there's talent there. I know that Brian Kelly is a good coach. I don't know that he's the transformational elite coach that some people have thought at times, but he's a good coach.
Family man.
He's a family man. There's no doubt about that. He had to fire his DC last year. It was terrible. And they were terrible on D, or else, you know, a Heisman-winning quarterback season from Jaden Daniels, you'd think would at least get you to sniff the playoff,
yeah.
Right? So I think Garrett Nussmeier can be a good player. If we're going to do team-for-team comparison, I mean, look, I like Tennessee's defensive talent, absolutely better than LSU's, more proven talent, I believe. And the secondary could be a deal breaker. But I also absolutely like the upside and the talent of Nico Yamaleava over Garrett Nussmeier. So that's my issue. That's my beef. It's another homer beef today, along with the Preds fans. But as far as where they are, I think that's about right. It's interesting that they're the seventh SEC team. We know seven aren't getting in.
Yep.
But they're the seventh SEC team in the rankings, and that Oklahoma's right after them at eight, which, again, makes me think of that game and the enormity of that Josh Heupel homecoming game in Norman in terms of that as a sort of a maybe elimination kind of game.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are three games on the schedule to me for Tennessee that are absolutely transformational in terms of what they could mean for this team this year. Now, everybody's going to point to Georgia and Alabama, and I understand that. But, like, if you're Tennessee, you could lose to Georgia and Alabama if you beat NC State, if you go on the road and beat Oklahoma, and for the love of God, you got to beat Florida at home this year, right? Like, you cannot have
– that's not even worth discussing.
Right, you could not have Florida trip you up this year. And, look, Florida, their schedule's brutal. There's some talent there. I'm really interested to see what they do with their quarterback situation. They've got Graham Mertz. They also got a five-star kid coming in. So, like, do they leave Mertz out there the whole time, or does Billy Napier at some point say, oh, I got to try to save my job and then put the kid out there. We're going to see what
that looks like. See, the future looks good, guys. Come on, the future looks bright.
I'm really interested to see how that goes. But, like, those three games, like, Georgia and Alabama is one thing. Obviously, if you're Tennessee, you want to go on the road and beat Georgia. We'll see if they can even keep it competitive, which they've struggled to do. You want to beat Alabama at home for the second consecutive time. So we know that. Like, those are big games, and Tennessee, I think, is going to have a chance in that game. But, like, you've got to beat NC State early in the year. You definitely have to beat Florida. And I think you could make the argument, based on the way this ranking may shake out at the end of the year, that you need to go on the road to beat Oklahoma if you want to find yourself in the college football playoff.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the most underrated of all of it is NC State.
Yep.
It's at night. It's the first. It's not the first game, as someone inaccurately said on our station. I forget who that was. What an idiot! But it's the first, you know, big game. I mean, look, it's the first big game Nico's played in. It's great that they got him the Citrus Bowl against a good defense.
Yep.
And one of the worst offenses I've ever seen in my life, which made it like zero pressure at all in the Tennessee offense. It's like, really, just go out here and kind of run around a little bit. And, like, we know they're not scoring, but it's a big game on the road. I think it'll probably be about a 50-50 crowd in Charlotte. NC State's a ranked team.
Yep.
Huge game. You get that one, and yeah, then I think you just, to me, I'm discounting Florida, so you just, you know, take it wherever you want.
You do that.
Fans. I know. But, you know, they beat them at home last time.
Twice since 2004. But you go ahead and discount them.
They got a winning streak at home against them. They got a streak.
One.
Yeah. And they almost blew it. Good Lord.
I know.
That was incredible. But I'm just like, that can't even be. That cannot, especially after last year. Whoever is left from this Vols team from that game last year, if they aren't, like, one-arm push-upping all freaking week,
yeah,
what an absolute humiliation that game was. So I'm counting that as a dub. I think it's probably, yeah, like, you could get in with three this year. It's possible, but probably it's the Alabama or Oklahoma. Can you get one of them?
Yep. 615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts on the Vols, on college football coming up next. Do we believe that Georgia's the clear best team in the country? We'll get into that as well coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. That's a pair of tickets to give away to see Earth, Wind, and Fire with Chicago at Bridgestone Arena coming up on Tuesday, August the 20th.
August.
That is August the 20th, not April the 20th. Although we did paint a nice picture of what it could be like on April the 20th yesterday.
It'd be beautiful that day, too.
It would be.
Beautiful any day.
It would be. Call it 3-615-737-1025. We'll win a pair of tickets to see Earth, Wind, and Fire with Chicago at Bridgestone Arena coming up on Tuesday, August the 20th. We mentioned the coaches poll. As you brought up, NC State also ranked number 22 in the coaches poll. Do you buy Georgia, who is number one, and they got 46 first-place votes? Ohio State got 7, so they were at number 2. Texas did get 1. at number four. Michigan got a number one vote, by the way, at number eight as well. So there's
Connor
that.
Stallions voting?
Maybe.
Is Connor got a vote?
Maybe so.
Do you That's buy what the deleted text messages were?
Yes. It'll be in the Netflix documentary. Do you buy Georgia as the clear number one team heading into this season?
Yeah, I guess I do. I think, to me, it's Georgia or Texas. And it's very much, to me, it's about QB certainty. I mean, Texas has a heck of a backup too. But Quinn Ewers, I think he's going to be. You know, I think Quinn Ewers and Carson Beck. I think Quinn Ewers should be considered a guy who could challenge Carson Beck as QB1 in the draft. But we'll see. Those two very talented, and we know their quarterbacks are good. Are their quarterbacks great? I don't know, but I know that Ohio State, you mentioned earlier, the roster, the overall talent may be the best there in Columbus, and it's been that in some years. But quarterback. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what's that, you know, how good they're going to be there. So, but yeah, I can't argue with Georgia. I still feel like the way that they have recruited, developed, and just built a program that absolutely just rolls on like a machine. And when you bring back a QB with that, then I think you're probably going to be number one and should be number one.
I have no problem with Georgia being number one. I think they're loaded. You know, Carson Beck is, I think, a really good player. Now, is he kind of like a transformational type college player where he's like your bona fide stud number one pick? I still think that remains to be seen. Like, there's a lot of people talking about him going number one overall next year. He might. I don't know that I walked away from last year thinking, yep, that guy for sure is the number one pick. But he certainly played really well. I think he's going to have a great year for Georgia this year. So I feel much better about quarterback at Georgia. And, you know, their roster is as good as anybody. I still think Ohio State probably has the best roster overall, but Georgia's is right there with anybody. Oregon, to me, is going to be really interesting. And then Texas, you know, they make the college football playoff last year. They're stepping into the SEC. So what does that look like for them this year? Can they handle the SEC grind? Can they handle playing against some of these teams that they're going to play? I mean, this is, you know, it's not like the Big 12 has been some trash league forever, but there is a bit of a difference that you're stepping into this year with Texas and Oklahoma coming in here. So we talk about what that means for other teams. Like, you know, Tennessee, your job just became a little bit harder because you've got Texas and Oklahoma now to compete with in the SEC as well. Now, the flip side of that is also true. Texas, Oklahoma coming in, they got to deal with Georgia and Alabama and Tennessee and LSU and all these teams. So what does that look like for Texas under Sark? You know, obviously you feel good about their quarterback situation too, but I'm really interested to see what that looks like. But Texas, I think, is going to be right there too. I think they're clearly – Georgia's clearly one, Texas is clearly two in the SEC. And I think you can make a case Alabama's clearly three. Beyond that, it starts to get a little muddled.
Yeah, I mean, Ole Miss number six is definitely an eye-opener for me. But especially when they lose their best offensive weapon to Ohio State, you know. But they're still very good, and they did well themselves in the portal. So that does seem a little high. Texas, you're right. Of course, Texas, not only do they have this SEC schedule now, they, of course, have a trip to Michigan in week two. I mean, that's a really interesting game. Yeah. But their schedule, the big one, October 19th, I mean, Georgia at Texas, finally, wait, you know, like that is going to be tremendous.
Yep.
It's not bad. You got a little Mississippi State on there. You're always going to have Oklahoma on there. You got, like, Florida at home. You get to go to Arkansas. You get Kentucky at home. So
that last one
it is,
be
but then
spicy.
The last one, oh, my goodness, yes.
Well, Texas A&M, that'll be spicy.
For those of you who, like me, have watched the movie Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, we finally bring it on back, Burt Reynolds and Dolly Parton. Finally bringing it on back. What a name for a movie. It's a movie.
What
it's a real movie.
What a name for
great
a movie.
Great movie. That movie is about, well, it's not about, but it starts with Texas A&M. The winner gets to go to the place. That's
congratulations.
That's what it was, man. I think A&M won, if I'm not mistaken.
Matthew in Nashville says, regardless of how Colorado's record turns out, do you think Deion's son is a top 10 pick, referring to Shedeur Sanders?
Oh, I wouldn't say that now. You know, the thing about him, if is he really 6'2"? Because if he's really 6'2", then I'm more likely to buy that. I like him a lot. I think he's going to be a first-round pick. Top 10, QB1, I don't know. We'll see now. You know, their other player, whose name is eluding me now. Travis Hunter.
Yeah.
I was about to say Travis Scott. But it's not Travis Scott.
It is not.
Now, that guy.
Can't confirm.
That guy is. That guy might be the top non-QB taken in this draft.
He might be. And he could probably play both corner and receiver in the NFL. Probably not going to. Probably have to pick one, but probably could play both.
Probably. I think he'll be an elite corner in the NFL, but we'll see.
By the way, a lot of y'all asking about the Robbie and Rex Road Fantasy Football League.
Yeah,
we are going to begin
that time
to make announcements for that next week. By the way, Coy in Clarksville, you are in the league. You are the returning champion.
You're
so
in, baby.
Coy is in.
Is that his only reward? He gets to be in the league again?
I mean,
shouldn't we give him something?
That's a pretty great reward.
Should we buy him an app at the draft
or
something?
We can probably do that. Okay. Yeah, we can probably figure this out. We will have announcements on the Robbie and Rex Road Fantasy Football League coming up next week. So make sure you tune in to that. We got a lot of texts about that today. We will do that next week and begin to finalize those plans. So looking forward to that. Appreciate the fine folks at MTSU for having us out here today at MTSU football practice. Chase and Big Joe are going to have you covered live from MTSU football practice today as well. So make sure you're tuned in for that. Hope everybody has a great rest of their day. We're going to have Paul Kuharski on the program from 7 to 8 tomorrow. So an hour earlier than normal. 7 to 8 PK will be with us tomorrow talking all things Tennessee Titans. Chase and Big Joe coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to FinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.